Blog Talk Radio. Good evening, and this is the Sunday show on Here Be Monsters Radio. Tonight with me is my co-host, Jack Jodell, up in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and our Wayne Johnson is back with us, and of course he's en route, right, Wayne?
No. I'm up here up around BWI Airport right now. So yes, I'm in Maryland. So we're right here.
Okay, so you're in Maryland, and I'm in South Florida. And so welcome to another week of progressive frustration.
There's your laugh, Gwen. There you go.
You gotta have some happiness. You gotta have some lightheartedness. There's the wolf of the universe, and basically,
I'd say we're experiencing the warp and the wolf, and we've been in such death throes for how many years now. I think our season is turning around. Gentlemen, I know everybody is. Out on a limb and frustrated, and a lot of woe is me going on out there in the socials and such, and even people on the streets with this, what the heck with the Mueller report. I told Jack just before Wayne came on that I wanted to read a string of tweets by Seth Abramson, who's a constitutional lawyer, I believe. I've followed him for a long time on Twitter. If nobody objects, I'll read it because I think it brings a lot of clarity into focus.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, so this is Seth Abramson on Twitter, night before last when things got wicked. Breaking news, Mueller has sent a report to the DOJ representing comprehensive and will shortly be publicly summarized. And, of course, we know how that went. He goes on to say in a string, number one, at risk of sounding like an SNL talk show host, Mueller's final Trump-Russia report is neither. Mueller's final about Trump-Russia or report. So all the breathless reporting today suggests otherwise is inaccurate and misleading. Number two, what we call the Trump-Russia investigation is a web of criminal counterintelligence and congressional investigations that intersect with the work of the special counsel's office. So there are three key themes there: criminal, counterintelligence, and congressional. Mm-hmm. Three, Mueller is part of the criminal investigation. Mueller's work intersects with the counterintelligence investigation, and its work feeds into and draws from the congressional investigation. And here's the key. All three of these investigations are ongoing. I think that's important to realize. And it is key. All three of these investigations are ongoing. And number four, as part of the criminal investigation, Mueller investigated some things his office then prosecuted. He investigated some things his office handed off to others, and he investigated some things he chose not to prosecute. Then he investigated some things he is letting Congress handle. Another point, Mueller's criminal investigations, that is the information he derived during nearly 24 months of criminal investigative work, then fed directly into multiple counterintelligence investigations and will undoubtedly feed into the many ongoing congressional investigations. The news we got today is that Mueller will not himself be bringing any more indictments. That's it. That was the big news. Mm-hmm. That's all that just happened. And reporting that says Russia probe is done is false. Any reporting that Mueller's work is done is false. It is only what I said. Okay, and then he goes on. Focusing exclusively on what Mueller's office will be doing going forward and exclusively on the criminal investigation. So a small part of what we've somewhat misleadingly called the Trump-Russia scandal, we can see that Mueller may be done indicting. Maybe, but that's it. So that's kind of nebulous, but it's true. He did not say he was done indicting. As of today, Mueller had 10 attorneys working for him, himself not included, down from 17 originally. But we found out this week that certain attorneys who left his office will still be doing work for it. Why? Because the office has some work left to do. The office, whether still formally constituted or not, will see its attorneys prosecute Roger Stone in November, 8 months from now. And we'll see its cooperating witness, Rick Gates, participate in multiple ongoing federal criminal investigations, and that's just a start. The office will see its cooperating witness, Mike Flynn, testify in the Klan trial in July. Klan was NatSec official on Trump's transition team, whose case intersects with all other parts of the Trump-Russia investigation. Flynn is also involved in multiple other cases. The office will continue to pursue grand jury testimony from Roger Stone witness and continue to pursue a substantial trove of documents for its grand jury, which is seated through July as far as last reported, and as an unnamed state-owned foreign corporation. The office has, it appears, referred to DOJ for prosecution at least one man it previously promised to prosecute, Corsi, and presumably has referred to DOJ for possible prosecution of a whole host of Trump world figures who Congress has recently accused of perjuring themselves. We also heard from major media over the past few weeks that Bob Mueller's office was referring out an unknown number of cases to other federal prosecutors, including presumably based on the past cooperation and information sharing practices, prosecutors in FDNY, EDVA, and DC. So, I mean, there's a whole other list here of how we should be looking at this. But one of those are the key things. And one of the things that I think we should be focusing on is, you know, first of all, you can't expect your presidential candidates to be commenting on this because most of them will be possibly voting on whether or not to take legal action within the Congress against the president and or members of his staff, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, here's the other thing, too, that I've noticed with this is during the Nixon corruption and the investigation, there were a lot of who stepped up and said, yes, this needs to be investigated. We believe he's guilty. Let's move forward with this. The country has to know. But today there's a lot of Republicans who are doing interference running, protecting, stonewall. And that has been the difference between, you know, where what was good back then and what we're dealing with the corruption within the Republican Party today.
Well, during Watergate, of course, there was a lot of Republican cooperation that is
exactly
lacking this time. And I think that's the point you're trying to make, Wayne.
Thank you.
That's one important difference, but it still doesn't absolve Trump. Nothing absolves Trump of possible criminality. And like I was telling Gwen before we came on, I think the Southern New York investigation, Southern District of New York, is going to be very illuminating and will certainly highlight a lot of things on Trump's business aspects that we don't know at this point, that we only suspect. And I think it'll be very revealing, and I think it'll also be very, very damning. So we'll see what happens. Trump is not out of the woods yet. He may think he is. He may spout off about no collusion, I told you, and all this nonsense, but he's celebrating way too early.
Well, and something I'd like to add to what Jack is saying, We have a major election coming up where there are some major senator seats going to be open, like Mitch McConnell.
Oh, yeah.
Marco Rubio, I believe, is up, or maybe not. But there are a lot of Republican senatorial seats open. And one of the positive points of all this exposure and the ongoing collusion between the Republicans and the White House right now.
Right. There's where the collusion is.
Yeah, this is basically talking, showing people who are good people, decent people, and who are just stunned by what's going on. And the more we get the investigations in Congress on the television, the better, because more people wake up that way. But people are seeing what the Republicans have been doing, and they're seeing the effects of it socially on our whole society and globally. And it's like, okay, like next week or the week after, there's going to be riots in London because people want Brexit cast off. They want to re-vote. There's all kinds of trouble over there because the people who didn't vote and the people who are the decent folks of England are going, are you frigging kidding me? And they have been ever since it passed, but now they're in a tumultuous state. And I think that's what's happening here. And people are watching what the Republicans, I think the Republicans are taking more than just a bloodbath in the next election. And let's remember, there's not that many boomers to rely on in the Republican Party that are going to be voting for them.
And the millennials are almost non-existent that are supporting Republicans. They're blind if they are.
That's true. And I want to say something here. Last week in Coral Springs, which is the land inland side of the town I grew up in, Lighthouse Point, Florida. Two survivor girls from Parkland, from the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas shooting, committed suicide from PTSD.
Oh, no.
And this week has been real hard for kids.
Oh, my God.
And if you don't think that that is not a blade they will bring to the voting booth, you're not.
Oh, yeah.
There are an incredible number of coming of voting age high school graduates this summer who are already committed to registering and voting in the next election and voting Republicans out of office.
Yeah. See, Gwen, could I ask, were the girls that committed suicide, were they despondent over the way the slow progress or regression that we've seen on the gun issue? Or were they just unhappy because of what had happened?
Jack, I would say, they are committing suicide. It's delayed stress.
It's PTSD. They are living nightly. I would imagine these girls are nightly living in their dreams and daily at sharp noises in society, walking in school. All of it, they are going over and over. They're stuck. They've been stuck in a revolving mindset.
Nightmare. Ongoing nightmare.
Yeah, and they have not been able to break free of it. And,
that's as big of a tragedy as the shootings themselves. That's horrible. The stress that they're under and what they're living with is just, you know, we're on the outside and we can't quite see it, but you've revealed it now and it makes sense. And I feel so badly for those girls and the other survivors who are still dealing with this in their own ways.
Yeah. Well, you know, Jack, when you go through a group trauma or even a personal trauma, and it's more like group traumas, and there's so many people in so many towns and cities in our country today that are living with this. Well, when I graduated from school and I came back down to Florida, and I was bored because I didn't have a job. So I went and I got a job at a video store. I was opening and closing for them. and wasn't really that far from home. It was about 5 miles away. But there was a guy who used to hang in the alleyway that was homeless. And anyways, I'm opening one morning, and he pulled a switchblade and said, I'm holding you up. So, you know, you got to give me your money. And I'm like, oh, kid, dude. I took him for a joke. And I said, you know, dude, I said, man, go back to your sleeping box. You know, it was like, and I turned to open the key. And I learned a major lesson. You never turn your back on an enemy. Oh, and he got me. He got me. Went in.
Oh, my God. I didn't know that, Gwen.
It went in about an inch. And I'll tell you, it's not going in that hurts.
Yeah.
It ain't going in that hurts. It's coming out that kills you.
Oh,
but
yeah.
It was just a lot of blood and stuff. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, get your mother to lock you down in your bedroom grounded at 25.
Oh, Gwen, this is shocking. I never knew this.
But I went through a period of time because even after it happened, I was like, are you freaking kidding me? And thank God, a worker in the diner that was on the corner saw it happening and was calling the cops. And a bus, you know, an ambulance. And it amounted to me getting stitches is what happened and being very uncomfortable.
What a horrifying encounter. And how you must have emotionally suffered quite a bit and wondering why you, you know, and all that, all those
Jack, things. You know, to be honest with you, I mean, this is just who I am. I mean, I'm why you when I lose my bank account, but not when, you know, when something happens. I've usually been pretty good, except if it's family. And, I mean, out in public or whatever. But at that time, I just, it did shock me, and I was little, and my friends found out, of course, and they came and gathered me off to, we went to the local watering hole and, you know, sat at the bar all night talking about, you know, geez. So
holy Christ.
It was like that. But as time went on, I had some bad dreams to deal with.
Well,
and
yeah.
That's what I'm relating it back to. PTSD, you just don't, I've seen vets and older vets my age or a little bit older, you know, well, a lot older in some cases, Vietnam vets who just were, I mean, how did they do that? How did John McCain, with the horrifying
5 years in captivity.
And torture,
yeah.
And I mean,
Wayne, in your encounter in the service with your service, old service buddies, did you encounter much of that sort of thing, or have you experienced post-traumatic stress and that sort of thing?
Kind of glad you asked, Jack, because, like I said, I was, as you know, I was down in South America.
Right.
The Navy sent me down there to prop up all those military juntas of Pinochet and the, you know, the period of the lost children of Argentina for that military junta that was in charge of Argentina. And by the time that I got home, I realized that I did not do those people any favors, the citizens of those countries, because of the military dictatorial aspects.
Right.
And I will tell you that I make it very bluntly, it took me about 5 years to come home. I did not know what normal was anymore.
Wow. Well, it affected you adversely too then. You know, these are very impactful events that people don't really stop to think about, and now you're hearing them on our show today, folks. So it's these are thought-provoking items that you'd best give some thought to over the next period of
time. The next time you vote for a Republican who's taking money from the NRA, who, by the way, is getting a great deal of it from Mother Russia.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
that's where they don't allow citizens to have guns, paradoxically.
Yes. And that's a case that is yet to be tried, too. We know the facts surrounding it. Now we will see this Bettina babe go to, you know, get taken into court. The other part of all of this with PTSD and these Stoneman kids and the high schoolers and the young people of our country right now, you know, there's a hell of a lot of, you know, our good friend Oso, he we blogged with him for years. And he's a Brown Beret there in Oakland and works with activists for the community. And
is that Oso?
Oso, yeah.
Yeah.
And
boy, we haven't heard from him in a long time. I hope he's doing well.
He seems to be. He's on Facebook,
good.
Jack. But he is basically working with the community still, and he can sit in town and tell you his own experience and the experience of people of color and black communities that are oppressed by the police force. Now, this is a form of stress that white privilege doesn't put on a platter for you, that we are now having conversations about, even though we have known since Black Panthers walked into the courthouse building in San Francisco. That is going on, and it's traumatizing, and people grow up and out of it, and some people can't handle it, and they go to crime, or they go to drug addiction, or
right.
what have you, and it happens in all parts of the community, but it is nucleized in the those parts of our communities that are racially bordered, and
poorer,
you know,
and
poor.
Yes.
Oh my God, the poor.
Yeah.
And this is, you know, we are having these conversations though, and I find that wonderful because conversations have never been so as broad and clearly laid out before people. And a big reason is because we're all hooked up on this
right.
instant communication, and of course, 24-hour freaking news, which is giving everybody
oh, yeah.
a need for a Xanax prescription at this point. They are, you know, it's also providing the triggers for a lot of the community. Why do you think so many people are leaving the church? The
oh,
patriarchy
yeah.
is incredible, and they're looking for an authentic voice of spiritual or moral value. We're
well, the TV world has made them want and expect an instant solution, and that's a little bit misleading. And we know because we've been through various things in our own lives, we know that that's an unrealistic expectation. But
yeah.
nonetheless, it is out there, and it is very valid, and that's a terrible thing, really. People have just got to realize that these things are a gradual process, and they don't happen overnight just because you want them to. You've got to struggle for it, you've got to work for it, and you've got
to
educate people and talk to people about it and get it out of your system that way.
But Jack, you and I practice it and do it every day. You're a kind man.
Right.
You would
a lot
never
of people
turn
don't
away from... No, but
a lot of people are victims.
That and a lot of people learn that victimhood is not what, the way they want to stay in their lives. Becoming
right.
a victim is an opportunity to become your own hero. You
yeah.
know?
Good point.
You either
good point.
Sit in, look at, and I will bring this up about our kids down here, our Parkland heroes. Though each one of those kids, whether they are surviving it or not, they're all heroes. But we lost two
oh, yeah.
young women this week.
Oh, that's a heart. That's a heartbreaking
and yet,
situation.
And they were victimized, and that's what happened. And yet we have David Hogg and Delaney Tarr and
oh,
all
yes.
these other kids that are practically in their own first season of Congress themselves. They're out there every week, a lot of them in school now, but doing everything on campus and taking trips to waken other schools and other students to this is what we have to do to get a better world for ourselves.
I hope their efforts will lead to a gigantic enlightening of our society and our culture and have a lasting, eternal impact, because that's what they deserve, and that's what the victims that they're representing deserve, you know. And it's just a tragedy. It's a nonstop tragedy for those folks, and they have to live with the after effects of it every day of their lives now. And thank God they've committed themselves to doing something positive toward ending that that horrible situation that they endured.
Part of their process, I'm sure, Jack. Part of their healing process. They have
right.
to do that.
Agreed. They made choices. And, you know, this fits what's going on in society. I've known since the 90s. I mean, I was always a perpetual student in love with history and polytheism and theocracy, and I've studied it all. I've fascinated by it all my life, so I've always been a rather spiritual individual, you could say. But when in my 30s, I realized, well, this is more than just a study. This is how you live. This is who you are. And there's
it's a way of life.
Yeah, it's your path. This is what you do. And you can grasp or create a career or a job that is just that. You don't have to compromise. That's what I did. You know, I mean, I've often wondered if I wasn't really selfish about it, but it's who I am. And I'll tell you what, this is why a lot of people have made these choices. A lot of people our age, Jack, and a generation below us have made these choices to say, hey, look, you know, my truth has got to be my own. You can't tell me. You can't judge
yes.
me.
Mm-hmm. Well, word.
I mean, Wayne, you've got a couple of kids who are now parents, and I'll bet they have that same instinct in them, their authentic voice, not to be told what their moral values should be.
No, yeah, that's a good point. You're absolutely right. Absolutely. So, you know, we're just thinking, let me interject here. Excuse me. You know, this constant drone of Sean Hannity and the Fox programming and all this, I just call it the programming of hate.
Yeah.
And I couldn't but flash back to the book 1984, where they had every day 2 minutes of hate that would get people whipped up and stuff to, you know, to keep them in line, to keep them regurgitating the same propaganda. 2 minutes is nothing, because here we've got 24 hours of
a constant drone.
But Wayne, let me give you a little smile to place there, a place card smile in the midst of that, because you're right. You know, the New Zealand massacre took place, what, a couple of weeks ago? It was just two weeks ago that Australian idiot with the automatic guns went after a mosque in New Zealand,
big, tough
right?
guy.
Yeah, this past week, first of all, they passed laws. They
6 days after it happened, they had a law passed.
6 days after. And bless that PM. She is mothering her country.
Yes.
And
she's a great lady.
Do you know what she did, Wayne? She took
Yes, I do. But you tell the audience.
She took Sky News, which is Fox News, off the air. She wouldn't let them broadcast because they're bullshit.
Good for her.
So, if I'm not mistaken, because Fox News of New Zealand and Australia kept broadcasting the gunman's own video clip, they were kicked off of Australia too.
Good.
Right, and they were trying to make it look like it was some kind of put up job. You know, they were doing what Fox News here does.
Well, they're twisting the truth to their own benefit. Which
right.
is a sick thing.
Yeah, and the PM of New Zealand said enough, and she blocked it from her their antenna array or what have you, all of the systems, and every one of the networks on there agreed.
Agreed,
And the providers agreed, and so did, I believe, Australia. Yeah, you're right.
Well, they're
that.
Not as bought out and corrupted by big money as we are here in this country. And there are different forces at work here in this country that thankfully don't exist over there. And it's a pathetic indictment of the type of crap we put up with in this country and we allow.
Jack, there were laws. News had to be accurate and truthful.
Right.
It was during the Reagan administration that he basically repealed that law. Henceforth,
right.
That's when we saw the rise of Fox propaganda.
Yeah,
well,
that's
true.
Well,
you know who what that was. That was the, quote, moral majority wanting to put their Christian networks on as factual, and they began doing little newscasts.
And Jerry Falwell ended up being a big hypocrite anyway, and he was caught soliciting a whore or something, as I recall. You know, these guys, they love to preach, but they don't follow their own preaching.
Yeah, that was Jimmy Swaggart who was...
Jimmy Swaggart, that's who it was, yeah.
Well,
and Jerry Falwell had his moments, too.
Oh, they all do. I mean, come on. They all
do. Well, they're trying to stick their nose where it doesn't belong in other people's lives. And they should just cease and desist.
There's only one who was not really a hypocrite. She was just, you know, that Catholic, you know, guilt bent. And I would listen to her. Sometimes she'd actually lift me up. But most of the time I was like,
who was that now?
Mother
Angelica?
Mother Angelica.
Yeah, she was on EWTN. She passed a year or two ago, a few years ago.
Yeah, she passed a few years ago. But they rerun her all the time. People.
Oh, yeah.
Her.
Well, she created that network, that EWTN television network. It's the only Catholic television network in the entire country, in the world. And it's active all across the world on radio and TV. And she did accomplish a lot in her life, and she was an old-fashioned nun, the kind we grew up with, the one with the habits, and must have taken them a half hour to get dressed or undressed every day.
Coffee,
I can't imagine
coffee,
walking
yeah,
around
coffee,
like that all the time, but that was her bag.
Rosaries. Yeah, the coffee bean rosaries. Yeah, I remember. I remember real intimately. They were my nemesis, most of them. Then again, there was one or two actually in my grade school that were, you know, guides to me. They were real light workers. They were real true, kind, gifted,
wonderful hearted people with good intentions and not domineering.
The majority of them, though, I mean, they were still using rulers when I was in grade school.
Oh, yeah. Very domineering, very strict, very authoritarian. And there was no ifs, ands, or buts. You had to do it their way. It was their way or out on the street. That's the way it was.
We've seen what kind of cruelty can be dispensed under those conditions.
Yeah.
And we now know the kind of abuse that was dispensed and is being dispensed under those conditions. And we don't even want to get going down that road because we're talking.
Now, Wayne, you were not raised in the Catholic school network, were you?
No, I was not. But the neighborhood I grew up in, Glen Burnie, which is a suburb of Baltimore,
the neighborhood
was full of Italians and Catholic Italians.
Yeah, that's right.
And, I used to hear, especially the family name, last name was Alassios, and they had like four or five boys, and everyone was more ornery than the last one. And they were, busted me with a ruler, man, in the hands, and that really hurt, you know.
I saw a nun teaching first grade one time, and she was a no-nonsense, old-fashioned nun. And some kid was carrying on one day, and he wouldn't shut up, and she brought him out in the hall, and he was mouthing off to her, and I saw her flip him right on his butt, and he landed hard, and he didn't know what hit him. She would be sued today, but it did the trick because the kid behaved a hell of a lot better afterward. I'm not endorsing it, but it was a fact.
Let's remember, Jack, we have had activist nuns on the show, nuns on the bus.
Oh, yeah,
and,
that's right, yeah.
And there, whether you know it or not right now, and I kind of keep up with these things because I correspond with a couple of the old gals still through email, would you believe? But not nuns on the bus, but in my life, that were in my life once.
Oh, yeah.
And basically, all of the nuns were under the bishop's conference 3 years ago, were put under when Francis was first getting in. The bishops' conference required and asked the Vatican to put all of the nuns, every order in the U.S. and Canada, under Inquisition.
Really?
So
I never knew that.
Yes, and they still are under Inquisition. And why? Well, you got nuns on the bus, first of all. Let's go there.
Oh, yeah. Well, they don't want any deviation. They don't want it. They're very non. They're very.
Yeah.
They just don't want any deviation whatsoever. That's paranoia.
A majority of the nuns now that are, and most of the nuns, if you've noticed, parochial schools are no longer nun-ridden. Most of nuns today are, at Berkeley and other prestigious universities, they're academics, they're teachers, professors, and authors, and many of them in the sciences.
And they're enlightened.
Yes, and they bring their spirituality to bear through that, which often does not coincide with the patriarchal dictum of the Vatican. And so they also bring in a great deal of revenue for their own projects. Mm-hmm. And the bishops are a little, you know, now we're following the money, right? And so you've got that going on. Well, several of these sisters and mothers who are, you know, well known have actually left their orders and kept their jobs and work to, you know, do what they can to bring an enlightenment to this issue. But there is one nun out of Italy that they put over this Inquisition. It's being run by a nun from the Vatican.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, well, she's that old kind of ruler in the back pocket gal. Or, excuse me, they could fit anything into those pockets. Yeah, no,
they're so huge and flowing,
Those pockets were so big. And they could put anything in. And they could hide Tommy guns under those habits. I swear to God they could.
Yeah.
I had the habit that had the straight shift coming down, you know, like a cassock almost, but all the buttons and robes were covered by that shift. And they could, you know, all of a sudden you see that ruler coming at you, never knew she had it on her. You know, it was like, what did she put
it in?
A sword. And they did.
That's true.
It's funny. But it goes to show you a lot of people have eschewed that kind of mindset to where your moral values are prescribed by, you know, somebody beating fear of hell into you.
That's another reason I think that the Catholic Church has undergone such a change in stress since we were kids. They have lost tons and tons and tons of people. Oddly enough, to evangelical churches that are less demanding. Isn't that incredible?
Well, yeah, there are a lot of, there's also, believe it or not, there's also the cases of priests who've been, not defrocked, but what's the other one where they can't perform mass?
Not defrocked, but the same distance, same difference, yeah.
Yeah, and
they're prohibited from
prohibited by the Catholic Church from conducting mass. But there's a little Catholic kirk down in Pompano that I used to make the incense for, and Father Michael has St. Mary's, and Father Michael is still the pastor there, but he bought the church from the church, the property. And he doesn't call himself a Jesuit anymore because he's actually been defrocked for it, for going on with it. But, and this is since the 90s. He's getting to be an old geezer, but he's still there. And he was one of these priests that was like, well, we got to work with it. You know, we've got to change the church, you know, and the church has to change us, but we've got to change it. You know, I can remember talking to him and going, wow, dude, you know, would you like a toke here?
he had noble intentions, but he was in error, I think, because it was pretty immovable back then and even today.
Right.
It has made its changes.
He wasn't in error. In my opinion, he wasn't in error. But
He
did retain his church, and it's built, and it's evolved, and it's not an evangelical. It's just, what he is affiliated is with what I'm a minister of, and that's the Unitarian churches.
Mm-hmm.
I'm actually a minister. So it's you never take these things on lightly either. A lot of people out there have got minister cards that just, you know, went to the internet. But it is a path, and it is all about the shifting of people awakening. As you say, Jack, an age of enlightenment is being triggered.
Right.
And it has been since the damn 60s, in my personal opinion. But people are looking for a better moral ground to walk on. because
well,
they see
the Vatican II conference that they had in the early mid 60s really rocked the Catholic Church in many ways. It created a lot of tension, a lot of changes. It made the parts of the Mass to be able to said in the common language of the area. And prior to that, it was all in Latin. I remember as a small child going to church, it was all Latin.
Yeah.
And you had to learn all that stuff and memorize it and know what the reply was. So it was
Dominus,
it really changed.
Yeah, in the name of the Padre, the Filius, Spirit, the Sanctum.
In Secular, Lorum,
amen.
Mea
culpa, mea culpa.
Mea maxima culpa,
yeah.
Oh, yeah, I remember all that stuff.
I can remember as a young, like 11, 12-year-old, standing in church and reciting the Apostles' Creed one Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually listened to the words as I was saying them for like the first time.
Oh, yeah.
And I said, ooh.
Well, they still recite it at church.
I know. I said, this don't sound right to me. And from that day forward, I became a problem. I just was always in trouble. But the thing is, people are looking for a moral value that is true for them. And
right.
I still maintain that all us, and I'll include us, you, me, and Wayne, we're decent people. We have common moral values.
Right.
You know?
What church were you raised in?
Methodist.
Oh, yeah. I had a lot of Methodist friends.
Yeah.
But like I said, I can remember Vatican II and when that was implemented.
Right.
There was a lot of little old ladies, the grandmothers, you know, my friends and stuff, who did not like that at all. They were not.
They didn't like the change.
In church, that wasn't true religion to them.
Yeah.
That's called indoctrination.
Well, yeah, people get rigid, especially the older ones. They get pretty rigid, and they don't want to change their tunes ever, and they don't like changes around them, and they didn't understand it at the time. Just like they didn't understand, undoubtedly, the racial tensions that were going on throughout society at then too, that are still evolving, by the way.
You're right. You're right, Jack. You're absolutely right. I do remember how the Diocese of Boston began to sell off churches, little local churches in the area and the counties around Boston.
Sure.
And you know who to pay off. You know why? To pay off all these.
Oh,
churches,
sexual encounters by the priests on the children. How disgusting.
Right. But do you know who suffered? You know who really suffered from all of that?
The children.
No, I mean.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, but it was the elder community, a lot of elders who knew no place else to go for comfort and for hope.
Very true. Yeah, good point, Gwen.
An incredible spiritual thumping. And, at the time I wrote something about it in the Boston Phoenix, and it was upsetting to the Catholics what I wrote. And I said, come on.
It came out of nowhere and it shocked a lot of people and it ripped the rug right under their feet and it sent them sailing and they didn't quite recover from it. And who can blame them? Something they'd based their life on and their belief system on, and all of a sudden it was uprooted.
And they did a lot of, charity work, like with Joey Kennedy. Him and his cousins were supplying heat through the churches to the different elders and all of that stuff.
That's right.
Food banks that they would come and supply themselves. These are people living on Social Security, good Catholics all their lives, who would come to the church not just for help, but to come in and kneel and not going there. Get upset and angry because it crushes my heart to think that and to remember listening to this one old gal I spoke to in South Boston who was just not knowing what she was going to do with herself, and I thought she's going home, and within a couple of months she's going to cross because she just doesn't know how to stay here without her lifeline.
Yeah, and that's a real tragedy, and that's quite a good insight you gained on that, Gwen. That thought had never occurred to me, and it's very valid for a lot of people. Their belief system was completely shattered, and they were left with nothing to hold on to.
Well, and they still believed in the church, many of these people. They still believe in the church. And they reach out to the church. Look at what's gone on during Trump's administration to those bastards who are running the diocese of D.C. and what those Catholic bishop did to, you know, the homeless food that they used to provide and mm-hmm. everything as some kind of punishment to liberals for how they were, you know, pursuing against the new president. I mean, that happened, Jack.
Blindness. I just can't believe. It's hard to believe.
And
but they're out there.
That? I don't think that Pope Francis is that kind of a man.
I really don't think so either. And, you know, that bishop was being awful high-handed and taking on errors that were not due him. I can't believe that guy was that uppity. That's really bad.
They all want to be curious. And if they ain't curious, they still want the red robe.
Yeah.
You know, it's a political
thing. Oh, it's a status symbol thing for them. It's terrible.
It's another, but that said, then there's the other half of the church that is filled with uncompromised, morally good, and spiritual
right.
men and women who are out there to minister to their communities. How do
right.
you fight against that kind of thing?
Well,
you know,
the people that volunteer for different charitable aspects in that. Those are wonderful people. You can't find fault with any one of them, you know.
No,
their intentions are great.
And here's the other thing. All of the wonderful organizational skills provided by churches to help the community
right.
have staggeringly in the last 8 years, especially after the fall of the economy, it has staggeringly gone unkempt and deteriorating. And
well,
I know,
you know, conservatives love to rely on churches to do their work for them. They say, oh, leave that to the churches. The churches, by and large, do not. They have wonderful endeavors, and they're not funded well enough to do what's needed. And it's wrong to rely on those people because they just don't have the wherewithal to get the job done, whereas the federal government does.
Yeah, but they used to, Jack. They used to. They really did. The Catholic Church, the Methodist Church,
well,
Lutheran,
it was funded a lot better in those days. They had a lot less defections. The defections have
right.
hurt that group immensely.
Right. Because
so there are no easy ways out for them, unfortunately.
No, and it's such a loss to the community. And at the same time, to have the government being, you know, saddle-ridden by Republicans who would cheat, you know, who would cheat the poorest among us to just put an extra piece of sugar on their table.
Exactly,
That's
no longer just the business. It's now the working middle class, the standard of living for the working. Because in this new budget that Trump has proposed, you know, like when they had the Republicans in there, they wanted to decrease Social Security and Medicare. That's not funded by taxes.
No,
that is withdrawn from paychecks. That's what you paid into.
Individual contributions out of paychecks.
So now they're going to pay for that big tax cut that they just gave away 2 years ago.
Right.
Off the backs of the now baby boomers who are coming of retirement age.
Right.
And this is what we paid into our whole life. Now they're screwing us on it.
Well, you
know,
Wayne, it's a fact. It's easy for those people to prey on the people below them in income because those people are not sufficiently organized and prepared to deal with such an onslaught. And that's why they do it. It's easy pickings for them, you know. And they pull this bullshit time after time.
Right. Well, it was like when I was camping about these, you know, the extremists that are welcomed within the Republican Party. He says that's a good demographics to get whipped up, you know, when it's time to whip up the nut jobs.
Yeah.
And that's what those people as. They are nothing more than the nut jobs that they're manipulating through propaganda. Unfortunately, the inmates now have taken over the asylum.
Yeah.
Via Trump.
There's no whipping that needs to get done. It's already done. They're already up. They're already out there flagging. Look what's happening to our communities, the hate, the violence. And it's growing by the month. It has grown.
Well, the nut jobs should crawl back under their rocks and stay put. They're exerting a very negative influence on our society, and they don't belong in public life in any capacity.
But that's the issue. The Republican Party has validified them, given them a voice, and empowered them.
It's a tragedy of our time.
You know, you get around your community, Wayne, and Jack, you get around your community.
Yep.
And I get out there once in a while, but basically, you know, you can even tap your community if you're just, you know, keeping up with them online or whatever. The thing is that you can notice what's working and what isn't and what's going on. I'm going to tell you something. I truly think this is the right demographic, too. And if you check with the ACLU and the Southern Poverty Law Center, you'll find that this is a very small minority of the country.
They're very loud, though. They're very domineering and very loud.
Especially when they got a bullhorn like Fox News to work with.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know,
well,
I mean.
Open up the president now.
Yep.
Yeah, well, they've got their own president who cheated through Republicans, you know, yada, yada. Here we go. Circular argument again. It's like, how do we
like fix that? Circular argument. Which came first, the egg or the chicken?
The chicken or the egg, yeah, it's true.
It doesn't matter, they're here. I don't care what came first.
Well, in the old days, you know, you could rely on the churches to keep some of these nut jobs in place. They weren't allowed. Trump has enabled these guys to come out and voice their hate and their frustration and their anger in such a way that is not helpful in the least to solving any real problems out there. And the churches used to be kind of an inhibiting factor. They'd make people think before they acted, and now people are just they're acting and then thinking later about it, and that's a dangerous development.
You know, if you have faith and you go to Kirk every Sunday, I can remember being in church and listening to some of the priests who were actually giving really great sermons.
Oh, yeah.
And in every church, the minister gives the pastor will give an excellent sermon, says, you know, be kind or, you know, reach into Matthew or, you know, they were kinder. They were gentler. They were hopeful people. And there's still plenty of them out there. It's just that they're drowned out by the crush of financial stress and the lack the lack of attendance too, which is that depletion of, you know, okay, you've got to be sweet and kind and good. And if you don't, you're going to hell, you know. Now it had its swing back effect a couple of times in our history. It's having it again. You know, people are saying, excuse me, but no, that isn't, I don't accept that.
It's a gross oversimplification, and it's wrong to do that.
Really? What's the right? It's not about the moral values?
It is, but I'm saying the opposite approach is what you were describing there, and that's where... You just can't take the law into your own hands. You've got to...
I would never think to do that.
Right. No, and I know you weren't advocating that either, but I think you were describing people that do tend to do that.
Well, okay. Well, I was trying to make a point about our moral values, values. And there is a correlation because you have all these wonderful evangelicals and the moral majority and all these creepy people like Billy Graham Jr. there or whatever his name is, who come on with this soulful, you know, serious look and you know, I am an authority and you need to obey my authority because it's given to me by God.
He's just hanging onto his daddy's coattails and he's riding it for all it's worth. And that's unfortunate.
It is. But what it misses is the idea that there are a lot of people who have a faith that says, oh, I've got to listen to that. And there, a lot of those folks are the ones who are prone to hating and being very, you know, enthusiastic about the authoritarian government. You know, let's face it, that's who's supporting Trump right now, evangelicals and nut jobs.
You know, I just can't for the life of me understand any evangelical falling for his bullshit and supporting him. He is so full of hate and division. He's everything anti-Christ and nothing pro-Christ.
Oh, and
except in name only. He's phony.
And then there's the biggie, the sexual aspect. A man who's been with porn stars while his wife was burying his child.
I know.
You know, all of that. And people, especially Catholics, aren't comfortable chatting about those things. But let's
a lot of people have the view that, hate the sin, but not the sinner. And, you know, that allows guys like Trump to thrive out there. And I don't subscribe to that theory.
Neither do I. I don't think any decent person does, you know?
Well, there are a lot of people out there that do, though.
Well, you know what?
And that's why they can excuse him for the crazy stuff he does and says.
I'd say they were, to be really generous, I'd say they were 45-plus years old. People I meet that are younger, you know, they don't think that way. They don't buy it for a minute.
There's hope for the world, Gwen. There's hope for the world. And you know what? We're having a good time today, and we're almost at the end of our hour. Oh, my God. Time flies when you're having fun.
Right?
So, Wayne, will you tell everybody where they can find you online?
Very good. In on the blog world, Minds and Times, M-I-N-D-S and T-I-M-E-S, of F. Wayne Johnson. There's posted a lot of my life's experiences, and, you know, everyone is the sum of their own life's experiences, and this is giving you an idea of where I've come from.
And, Jack, let us know what your last blog is about. I'm still going to hold you to that theme song, I swear to gosh.
Well, the current blog deals with the Trump made a statement a while back about people who are very bad in for society and all that stuff. And a lot of the people he named were actually American heroes. And he's come out with a launching, bitter, terrible thing about John McCain, who's deceased. And, you know, leave the dead alone. It's absolutely unnecessary for Trump to get out there and lambast a dead man who can't defend himself. And I know the majority of people agree with me on that. So that's kind of what the last blog is all about. Many of Trump's hated villains are actually true American heroes. That's the title of it. It's at www.jodell53.com, that Saturday afternoon post. And that's what it's all about.
Thanks, Jack. I'm looking forward to that one. I'll tell you what. People who decry the dead are people who are in great fear. You know that, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's a biggie.
I mentioned that in my blog.
Yeah, great big bit of fear.
paranoid as hell.
So thank the audience for listening in, and please remember that we're here at 6 p.m. every Sunday for the Sunday show with Jack Jodell. I'm Wayne Johnson and myself and whoever's coming on board that day. And we will be back next week on Sunday at...
Keep pushing forward, everybody. Keep pushing forward.
And good night, all.
Good night. Have a great week.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, Gwen.